Hey everyone, welcome back to Radio Imbibe from Imbibe Magazine. I'm Paul Clark, the executive editor of Imbibe, and we've got a few days left to talk about our September-October issue before November rolls around and our attention turns to the holidays. If you've checked out that autumn issue or visited our website recently, then you came across a feature in that issue by Max Falkowitz, looking at sustainability in the bar world. Sustainability is a topic that's been talked about in great depth at cocktail conferences worldwide for several years now, but for a long time, many of those conversations barely scraped the surface of the true ecological challenges we're facing and the significance of the changes that need to be made by bars and distilleries, large and small. One of the distillers Max spoke with for that feature was Maggie Campbell. A former distiller at the Privateer Rum Distillery in Massachusetts, Maggie recently became the estate rum manager for Mount Gay Rum in Barbados. For this episode, we check in with Maggie on some of the thoughts she shared with Max for that feature, and we bring on Mount Gay's managing director, Raphael Grisoni, to fill us in on how some of those changes are being put into place at a distillery the size of Mount Gay. This is for our current issue that's out on the newsstands, our September-October issue. We have a feature from Max Falkowitz that's looking at sustainability issues within the spirits and cocktail space. And I want to talk to you because, Maggie, you spoke with Max for this piece, and this piece actually kind of stems from something that you and I did a couple of years ago with Ivy Mix, talking about climate change at Bar Convent Berlin. In that piece and in our conversations, Berlin, one of the things that you pointed out was that much of the time when we talk about sustainability and the kinds of changes that need to take place to get there, we're putting the onus on individuals and consumers to change our patterns. Not to say that that's not important, but from your perspective, we need to be looking more at the source and at big producers and decision makers. Well, you've spent much of your career as a distiller with smaller producers, smaller companies. From your experience working with craft distillers, what kinds of policies and changes did you see being made in the direction of reducing distilleries' carbon footprint and moving in a sustainable direction?
Yeah, I definitely got to see some exciting things around my peers in the U.S. craft distilling community. In particular, I think Leopold Brothers has done an incredible job managing their water usage. I think that there's so much emphasis on their technique and product because it's so excellent, but truly, if you peel back that curtain, they were one of the very first producers who ever spoke to me about responsibly sourcing spices, responsibly sourcing ingredients, creating products to be answers to ingredients that were concerning as far as their environmental impact. So I think there's a lot of that going on. You're seeing a lot of recycled water usage for condensers through water towers and other such techniques, which are pretty exciting.
And back to the original point that I was making, you know, when we're talking about this, and you know, it becomes almost like a personal virtue issue when we talk about people reducing their climate footprint. But when you look at larger companies and decision makers, how much of a role do they play in this process? How much more significant is it for them to make significant action?
Yeah, I think when we talk about businesses, one of the ways they can actually be a really positive force is in making some of these choices that have a very large impact on a large scale, especially, you know, as producers, we're extracting things from the environment for our own use. And so being aware and being ensuring that we're thinking about how sustainable that is, because that matters for the sustainability of our companies. You know, one of the interesting things about Mount Gay is it's been here for centuries, and we want to be here for centuries more. And making sure it's sustainable in every way, and in particular environmentally impactful.
And, you know, you mentioned Leopold Brothers just a moment ago, Maggie, when we were talking about examples, and things can get really dark when we're talking about climate change. But we do want to make sure that we hold up success stories and good examples and have people doing the right kinds of things. When you look at the spirits and cocktail space, you know, whether it's a small producer, large producer, but also within the bar realm, what are some good examples that you see out there or people who are working in a progressive fashion?
Yeah, I'm really interested in 86 Waste that was also featured in this article. I think they've done some incredible work to talk about meaningful, sustainable change in the bar industry, in hospitality. They've really done a lot to discuss what's happening with COVID and single-use products. And they do a lot of training and a lot of support for the community broadly to get past some of these really simplifications. I think, you know, there was a great quote from them in there about how, you know, what can be a big, broad goal out in the future, as opposed to like getting real answers about, you know, truly impactful changes people can make. And I think that's really effective to hear. I really follow the writing of Jade Marley. She was also featured in the article. I follow her on social media. I think she's talking about some of the most progressive topics around this. And one of the things she said was, you know, spirits and sustainability don't start at distillation. She said that in that article. And it's so important to support your people who are bringing everything to your facility, who are creating your raw materials. You know, the quality of your raw materials are really important, but the quality of how those people are treated are also important. And I think that she talks a lot about, you know, we can hear brands often discuss waste, et cetera, but how much of the process are they involved in? Are they buying a pre-distilled product? Because then if they're making really intense claims about water usage, a lot of that potential waste could be outsourced to other parts of the production. Mm-hmm. So being able to make everything in-house, I think that there's a lot of awareness about what's being used and how it's being used. And for me, you know, in my last year of really figuring out what I wanted to do next, when I spoke to everyone at Mount Gay, there was an intense sincerity and real world discussion about sustainability that really excited me. Because I'll admit, I think you've, and I've talked about this, I've gotten jaded from my like punk rock high school, college days, and to see like actual genuine sincerity around the topic's really inspiring.
And, you know, it's tempting sometimes to look at businesses and especially larger businesses and think they're just part of a problem. There's not really a solution. Where if there is a solution that's being put forward, it's greenwashing. And certainly that greenwashing exists. I don't need to minimize that because we see it all around us. But when you look at the spirits world, when you look at distilleries, large and small, there are some really kind of cool stories that you come across of folks who are doing things. But in a recent issue when we covered Scotch whiskey, talking about whiskey distilleries in Scotland, how some of them are doing really innovative things to reduce or even eliminate their emissions and their use of carbon. Where you look at a company that we quote in the story, Nova Fogo and Drago Sochinte, who is doing great things in terms of moving towards a carbon neutral direction for his spirits and for his distillery. So you do see some really impressive action taking place. And, you know, you're at Mount Gay now. You're at a much larger company. And, you know, I want to bring Raphael in on this in a moment. But also, what kinds of things can a larger producer like Mount Gay do to help reduce their carbon footprint and put things on a more sustainable path and kind of create these good models for others within the community?
I think that, you know, things that are exciting are setting real goals and having real timelines and plans. And I'll let Raphael speak much more to this. You know, I have been really impressed with everything I already knew, but seeing it being here, it's really exciting. And so I'll definitely let him share, as he's sort of, you know, a big champion and a big leader. And it's great that the leadership is, you know, it comes from the top of the organization. It's not, you know, a side thing. It's coming from the top. Let's get this done. Let's do this together. Let's take care of our people. As I mentioned earlier with Jade's quote, you know, you got to support the people who are doing the work. That has to be sustainable too. I've been amazed how many people I speak to here have been here for so long, decades and decades of a sustainable working relationship at the company. And it's really inspiring to see that theme go throughout, taking care and stewardship. I think a 300-year-old company, any opportunity to get to be even a tiny drop in that pool and get to be present, you can't help but feel a sense of stewardship there, that you're one small part receiving something and in time handing it off to someone else, and that it has to be in as good shape or better to be lasting. And I think to me, that's been really exciting.
Well, Raphael, could you fill us in a little bit on some of the things that Mount Gay is doing that fit within this model?
What is important also to understand is that we are on a small island. So everything we do is impacting directly our environment, so nature, but also the people, the community. So I think that, and because we have also integrated the agricultural part, probably we are more sensitive naturally to those topics of environment, generally speaking, and sustainability. And I think that is very important to understand, because we are part of the agricultural world. You know, sometimes you have, as you said, you have producers, let's say gin, are purchasing effectively alcohol, neutral alcohol, grain alcohol or whatever. So they don't see the impact of fermentation, distillation, the impact on the usage of water, what you have to do, etc. So that is clearly not in their scope, and at the end their business is probably cleaner. Because we are almost fully integrated vertically, we are very involved in that. So what we are doing many things. We are doing things which are linked to renewable energy. And again, being a small island in the Caribbean, for once we have an advantage, which is the number of hours of sun per day and per year. Of course, there's the water management. There's something that you're going to see. Well, we started on the eco design, meaning everything linked to the packaging, lighter bottles, recycled glass that you will see soon. We are going to pioneer also, well, we did that in the past, which was recycling the bottles that are used in Barbados, so consumer can bring it back, washed and reused. We had some issue in the past, so now we are back on this program. Of course, sustainability versus the agriculture and all what our agricultural manager is doing on the estate. And we have as an objective to turn the plantation in organic plantation. And there's in the sustainability aspect, effectively, there's all the societal aspect with the community support and all what we are doing today. And probably the COVID put pressure a bit more on and the organization and the community. So I think we had to show up more and to show really that we are here. Yeah, we are a sizable company in Barbados, and we need to show support on renewable energy. You have to know that in Barbados, for decades, I'm saying decades, all the water heating system are solar. So when I moved for 13 years ago in Barbados, yeah, I say, wow, that's super cool that effectively every house have solar panel to create hot water. And I thought it was great initiatives, and that, yeah, it's part of the culture. We are naturally exposed to sun. So what we did some years ago, we started small with small installation of panel. And 2 years ago, we put huge panels on our bottling facility. And so now the bottling facility is supplied by the renewable energy coming from the panels. So next step is what? It's a decarbonization of distillation. So next year, so we are in the town and country planning process right now. So we are going to create a 5 megawatt solar farm. And this farm, so it's going to supply the distillery. And in 3 years, we are going to switch our actual natural gas boiler to electric boiler supplied by the solar panel. So that is an example how we want strongly to decarbonize our activity, because our final objective is by 2030 to be carbon neutral. So it's a big task, because when you're on a small island in Barbados, the scope 3 is huge, because you are importing lots of things, and all that has a huge CO2 impact. So we need to work on that to reduce and compensate.
When we're talking about implementing changes at distilleries and at producers, it's one thing to talk about doing that here in the United States and places like Washington State, where I live, or California. But working in a place like the Caribbean can present its own set of challenges when trying to reduce carbon emissions and move in a sustainable path. What are some of the differences or some of the challenges or just different ways of thinking about it that we need to consider when looking at distilleries in the Caribbean or in Latin America or in other parts of the world?
Yeah, I think Rafael really touched on it, that it is an island, so you really see and deal with, you know, waste and what you create. And, you know, I think particularly in other parts of the world that can be disadvantage on a global stage, it can be really complicated power dynamics as well. I do think that there are amazing things going on, like he said, here in Barbados, because it's just tradition, you know, solar power is incredibly common in almost all homes. The government is starting a countrywide compost program for every home. It's being rolled out slowly because there are challenges, but it's coming because it is something we deal with, having limited space, limited resources, limited water. You have to deal with the mess you make in a much more real way.
So I think here is the accessibility to the knowledge and to the specialists. So for example, so we have a British company that came to do assessment of our water usage and how to recycle. So because we are looking for maybe biodigester, this kind of thing. This technology is not available. So you have to bring people, there's a cost associated. So that could be a hurdle for some companies. We are lucky because we are belonging to a small group for which sustainability is taken very seriously. So we have the capacity of investing. I was talking about earlier about the solar farm. So yeah, we are supported. It's a cost, but the group is ready to invest. So that is so we have access to the specialists. We are looking for who are the best adapted people that can help us in this quest of being carbon neutral.
Well, you know, we're still waiting for a lot of government action and international cooperation in order to achieve meaningful progress in addressing the climate crisis. But as you look at your operations and those of other companies in your field, where do you see opportunities for progress? Where do you see like positive steps going on, and what gives you hope that we're actually making progress?
Well, one of my source of inspiration is what Diageo is doing with the Bulleit Distillery in the U.S. It's good to see that the number one of the spirits in the world is taking action.
For me, it's really inspiring to see some of the initiatives in Africa around sustainable farming. I think there's some really incredible local energy there behind it, and a lot of just traditional know-how and a celebration and excitement towards, you know, we talk about sustainable farming in the American market, and a lot of that is just based on indigenous practices. And seeing those sort of different traditions getting highlighted and getting featured for their really important contribution, you know, a discussion of waste and when was waste created as a concept is really interesting to me to always investigate.
Well, Maggie, Rafael, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today and to go over this and to share all of this.
Thank you.
Head to imbibemagazine.com to read Max Falkowitz's feature on sustainability in the bar world. And visit mountgay.com for more information on the distillery and its rum. We've got plenty more for you online at our website, and be sure to subscribe to Radio Imbibe for future episodes of this podcast. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, and Facebook for all of your social media needs. And if you're not already a subscriber to the print and or digital issues of Imbibe, then we can change that right now. Just follow the link in this episode's notes, and we'll take care of you. Thanks for joining us for this round. I'm Paul Clark. This is Radio Imbibe. Catch you next time.